वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
अंडा
कोशे
शरीरे
स्मिन् सप्तवर्ण संयुते वैराज्य पुरुषो योऽसौ भगवान् धरणाश्रयः अंडकोशे शरीरेस्मिन् सप्तवर्ण संयुते वैराज्य पुरुषो योऽसौ भगवान् धरणाश्रयः अंडकोशे शरीरेस्मिन् सप्तवर्ण संयुते वैराज्य पुरुषो योऽसौ भगवन्धा धरणाश्रया अंडकोशे शरीरेस्मिन् सप्तवर्ण संयुते वैराज्य पुरुषो योऽसौ भगवान् धनराश्रयः
Sorry.
Form of the personality of Godhead within the body of the universal shell, which is covered by sevenfold material elements, is the subject for Virat conception. Purport. Simultaneously, the Lord has multifarious other forms, and all of them are identical with the original fountainhead form of Lord Sri Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, it has been proven that the original transcendental eternal form of the Lord is Sri Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead. But by his inconceivable internal potency, Atmamaya, he can expand himself by multivarious forms and incarnations simultaneously without being diminished in his full potency. He is complete, and although innumerable complete forms are being emanated from him, he is still complete without any loss. That is his spiritual or internal potency. In the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, manifested his Virat Rupa just to convince the less intelligent class of men, who cannot conceive of the Lord as appearing just like a human being, that he factually has the potency of his claim to be the Supreme Absolute Person, without any rival or superior. Materialistic men can think, although very imperfectly, of the huge universal space, comprehending an innumerable number of planets as big as the sun. They can see only the circular sky overhead, without any information that this universe, as well as many other hundreds of thousands of universes, are each covered by sevenfold material coverings of water, fire, air, sky, ego, noumenon, and material nature, just like a huge football pumped and covered, floating on the water of the causal ocean. Whereas the Lord is lying as Mahavishnu. All the universes in seed are emanating from the breathing of Mahavishnu, who is but part of a partial expansion of the Lord. And all the universes presided over by the Brahmas vanish when the Mahavishnu withdraws his great breathing. In this way, the material worlds are being created and vanquished by the supreme will of the Lord. The poor, foolish materialist can just imagine how ignorantly he puts forward an insignificant creature to become his rival incarnation, simply on the allegations of a dying man. The Virat Rup was particularly exhibited by the Lord just to give lessons to such foolish men, so that one can accept a person as the incarnation of Godhead only if such a person is able to exhibit such Virat Rupa as Lord Krishna did. The materialistic person may concentrate his mind upon the Virat or gigantic form of the Lord in his own interest and as recommended by Sukadeva Goswami, but he must be on his guard not to become misled by pretenders who claim to be identical persons with Lord Krishna, but are not able to act like him or to exhibit the Virat Rupa, comprehending the whole of the universes. So Sukadeva Goswami's point, Parikshit Maharaj's question then is, how do we purify the material desires, the material consciousness that we have? So then this is then the topic that is given here, the Virat Rup. That by that person who cannot see the Lord, then he sees the material energy, because that's we're attuned to. But we're seeing the material energy from our own perspective, even that is clouded. We're seeing the material energy as something that is circling around us. And by how we perceive it, that's the reality, and how we perceive it, that's how it interacts with us. And its whole purpose is to interact with us to make us happy. Right? So we see the material energy, but we still don't see it in its proper form. We don't actually know what it really is, because we're thinking it's there for us. And our particular perspective is the perspective. So the concept then is then, because of this, then all these anarthas will remain in the heart, because they're stemming from the point that I am the center of the universe. I am the center of everything. I am the master. I am the enjoyer. So then, here, then, because the material energy is the common sphere of perception and experience, then Sukadeva Goswami is recommending this meditation on the universal form, because then you are dealing with something we're used to, the material energy. But we're dealing with it in such a way that it's not ours. The perception changes instead of us being the center. And the perception of it is how we see it. The perception is established according to how the Lord has created it. In other words, we're dealing with the material energy, but trying to remove this covering of illusion that we think it's how we think it is, rather than how the Lord created it. Does that make sense? So that's the first step, is that we recognize that there's something greater than us. Otherwise, then, we're in the center, we're very small, we're controlled by it, but somehow or another we're always, because we want to be in control, that's our focus, that's perception. We only notice those moments we're in control. And when we are, then it's a good day, we're on a roll, you know, when you're hot, and you know, all these different things, it's all happening. And then when it's not, then we become upset or depressed or disturbed, you know, or, you know, some who are more determined and they make, you know, better plans like that. So in some way, then, we're not actually recognizing the material energy for what it is. So here, then, we're able to recognize the material energy and we're able to then deal with it in the sphere of our perception. But we're starting to purify perception, take our perception forward. Right? By seeing the different elements within the material world as connected with the Lord. So the main principle is that this system is more for the non-devotees. Right? Because they don't accept the supremacy of the Lord. The devotees do accept that. So technically, it's not really for them, the Virat Rup. But we are noticing that the Bhagavatam is for devotees, the Gita is for devotees, or at least to bring those to those positions, but it's being shown to Arjuna. So that's manifest then, we could also say, in a more refined sense, for the demoniac mentality, or the asuric mentality. Right? The sura is, we accept the Lord. Asuric is that where we're not seeing the Lord. So those places within our life that we don't see the Lord, then we can use that universal form and purify it, because we're perceiving this without Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's a subtle point. But the difference is the impersonalist, this becomes fully their meditation, just the universal form and how it is and how it's the body of the Lord. And so they're seeing the body of the Lord as the universal form. Rather than, for the devotees, then we know the original form of the Lord, and we see that the workings of the material nature, that the instruments are his potencies. This is the difference. Does that make sense? So then with that, then the devotee can also use it in his own life for removing those anarthas or attachments where the material energy is very important for us. Right? Does that make sense? Means, we'll see, let's say you go to the ocean. The ocean is Krishna. Right? So then, one's bathing in Krishna. But the impersonalist, then we'll see this, you know, this is at the waist and all these different things. But we, from there, remember the original form. Does that make sense? So it becomes Udipan for remembering Swayam Krishna, as opposed to that the material form is Krishna. Does that make sense? So in this way then, all the various things in our life, we can connect in this way until we start to remember Krishna. And then this is not important. But the point is the instrumental aspect. Because that is also important for us from our vision, because that is our position, our relationship with the Lord. Right? We're instrument. Right? We're actually the servant of the servant. So we're assisting, we're the instrument for the servants to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? Means Krishna's associates, they're serving Krishna. The associates of those associates are assisting in their service, so we're instruments. So it's a natural position to understand things through instrumental. Right? Does that make sense? We're not the doer. Right? We're not even the one that is done to. We're the instrument for those who are involved. Right? Krishna is the subject. The devotees are the object. And we're the instrument for their interaction. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the position. Another aspect he's more focusing on is the form of the Lord, the original form, and he expands so many forms. So we tend to think there's Krishna sitting there, Vrindavan, and then he expands another form, and another form, and another form. The tendency is to make a difference between these. Does that make sense? Now, let us just say within ourselves, you're at a formal situation. Right, so you're dressed nicely, you're sitting properly, you know, you're keeping the proper sober mood and everything's like that. Then someone comes into the room who's a very close friend, right? And the opportunity is there that no one else is looking. They're all busy also being very formal and stiff and looking at the board and that. So at that moment you can get a glance, you know, a smile or something that is natural for that relationship. Okay? So, technically, that is a different form. You understand? It's a different form. Because how you smile, act, talk, behave, everything's different than the other. But with us, it's one body. But the point, the analogy is to bring out the element that Krishna already has his Swayam Rupa is everything. Then from that, he'll manifest parts of that. Does that make sense? It means in something like the rasa dance or something like the pastime where Brahma steals the calves and cowherd boys and he expands, then his complete form, as it is, expands. Right? But all the other expansions are parts of his mentality. They're not the full mentality. Does that make some sense? So the full mentality takes up the cosmic creation and beyond. We see it in one place, but actually it's the whole thing. That's why Mother Jashoda can see the whole universal form, everything in Krishna's mouth. Because everything is there. But he manifests within his unlimitedness, he manifests this part in Dwarka, this part in Vaikuntha, this part in the Purusha avatars, this part is the universal form. So each one of those is also unlimited within the unlimited. This is kind of the point where it's like our pea brain kind of starts to, you know, have nuclear fission. But whatever. But it's just a concept that we can kind of like intellectually accept that, okay, there is something bigger and it works. You know, just so we accept that, okay, this he's the big guy. Right? But it's important in that because Prabhupada would emphasize that don't make such a distinction between Krishna and Vrindavan and Krishna not in Vrindavan. Right, Krishna and Dwarka or Krishna and Vaikuntha. Because sometimes we'll make too much of that distinction. But that's for those who don't actually know the original. Right? It's projected as someone who knows the original. But let us analyze this. Right? Now let us say you have that close associate. The man is in there and he has his wife. Now, when the wife sees him in his business suit sitting there, you know, at the conference table, you know, she can see through the glass there. Does she think this is some other guy? And she doesn't have a relationship with him? And, oh, I don't like this guy. No, she just thinks, oh, he's just sitting here. Yeah, he's in there. Must be really boring. You know, and stuff like that. And, you know, trying to get, a glance or something. Right? Like that. Now, then, let's go into the conference room. So she knows him there. She knows him at home. She knows him, you know, out at, you know, on vacation. She knows him, you know, in family programs. Right? Okay. So all of those, she doesn't make distinction. Oh, this is not mine. Right? But now let us go into the conference room. All the people sitting around there, you know, in their suits and ties and all that. And then he's looking over at his wife and somebody notices that. Then they will appreciate that? No. They'll think, why is he getting distracted? Hey, this is an important meeting. Hey, this is... You understand? So, therefore, the person who can accommodate Krishna in Braja and Krishna in Vaikuntha and Krishna in the material world, that all it is their Krishna. That's the advanced devotee. But the one only Braja Krishna, that's the one who doesn't actually love Krishna that much. You understand? Mm-hmm. Very important. Otherwise, people preach the opposite and try to bewilder our mind that the person, only Krishna, only this and that, then that's only the advanced devotee. Right? It's a very important, these are little subtle things. It sounds good because to the mind, it sounds great. Yes, I'm focused. It's just like that. You know, if you love somebody, you focus on them. But the thing is they're using the wrong analogy. Yes, if you have affection for somebody, you focus on them. That's there. If you're chaste, you only have a certain person or persons that you're dealing with. Right? Does that make sense? That's true. But they're using the wrong analogy. It's a thing in logic where you're using the wrong analogy to prove your point. But because it's logical, it sounds great. But the real point is no, okay, we've chosen this one person, but within that person, everything about the person we accept. That's the affection. Right? So they're taking an aspect of tattva, but presenting it as rasa. So that's where the mistake is coming. And because of this, they bewilder the mind, because it sounds logical, sounds like that. Therefore, then, the classes, the hajjis, and like this, then they make it look like, oh, no, but it's Krishna's. It's all Krishna. Or in a practical app, yeah. Does that make sense? Yes.
Well, not to say that, I mean, I don't know when I'll ever get any kind of realization at the level of the gopis, but my understanding is that the gopis, they really only know Krishna
The point is well taken. That they only know him in Braj means that's their relationship. Right? Means, in other words, the wife, does she have a relationship, an interactive relationship with him in the conference room, in a board conference? Yes or no?
No.
But she has a relationship with him, so that means it's back there, at the home. That's the point. But everything about him reminds them there. But the sahajiya, it's, they can't listen to the dwarka pastimes of, oh, because it's not, I don't, you understand? It's just like the mother can only appreciate the child at home, but when he goes out and plays with his friends, she doesn't know who he is. Yeah, that's the point. In other words, the relationship, that's where it can manifest. In other words, they can't manifest the relationship when he's in these formal situations. Therefore, then you have a further extension of, I mean, this is important, because that is means of, you have sambhog when Krishna is with his devotees. That gives a taste. Higher than that is when they're separated. But higher than that is when they're together, but they can't interact. You understand? You know, Krishna's here, you know, they're here in Braj, Krishna's in Dwarka. Okay, that's a problem. But he's there, you can't interact. But if they're at Kurukshetra, here is Krishna, here is the gopis, they can't interact. That's more painful. Right? Does that make sense? Plus, we just, is a side thing, is that at Radhakund's considered the highest place in the cosmic creation. And around Radhakund and all the Shakis, they have their kunjas, you know, set up just for special, unique service. You know, each one is unique to the other, so that there's eight varieties of service that can be experienced. In Lalita's kunja, all the walls are bedecked with pictures or paintings of Krishna's pastimes killing the demons. Right? So it can't be. So it's that they know this and they appreciate this, but they appreciate that, and then it creates. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the mother hears that the son has just, you know, got an A in his English. So what does he get? He gets a, you know, a reaction. He won't get a reaction from the mother like the teacher. Very good, you know, studied very nicely, and that's it. You know, keep up the determination. You know, you got the intelligence, apply yourself. No, she'll just hug him, give him a kiss. Does that make sense? So they see Krishna's past and killing the demons to protect the devotees. He gets a hug for it. Right? The cowherd boys, he gets a standing ovation. You know? Like that. Mother just showed a faint. Right? Does that make sense? So it'll always come back to what is their rasa. But the point is the real receipt can appreciate Krishna on any platform, any relationship. Therefore, we see this principle is introduced when Krishna first comes on the scene in the Bhagavatam. Right? The queens at Dwarka are appreciating the relationship with the gopis. Bhishma Dev, you know, Kshatriya, you know, tough, you know, like this, sitting on a bed of arrows, you know, that's not necessarily what you call pleasant. But he's appreciating the affection of the gopis. Does that make sense? So everyone in every station who's an actual receipt can appreciate all the other forms of the Lord. But they'll see it from their perspective. In other words, in Vaikuntha, the points of Krishna's Aishwarya is, you know, like the cowherd boys, you know, he manifests a big thing, or, you know, all the demigods come and they go, cool, okay, you know, like that. Or, you know, hey, did you see the funny guy with the four heads, you know, hey, yeah, the guy with the snakes, yeah, you know, like that. So they'll see it from that perspective. So they'll see, bring it back to theirs. In Vaikuntha, they'll see Krishna's pastimes in Braja. And they think, so nice, so sweet. My Lord is so great. He has so many unlimited opulences. One of them is the sweetness. Right? So they can fully appreciate the Braja pastimes. But they'll see it according to their rasa. So that's the point is, the living entity always sees according to his perspective. That's fine. That everybody has an absolutely different perspective is not the problem. The problem is that the different perspective is not connected to Krishna. That's the problem. Because everybody is unique, they're going to be unique, and you find the more you're in Krishna consciousness, the more unique you become. Right? New bhaktas are all the same. Right? But give it a few years, they start becoming different. And give it 20, 30 years, and they become really different. Right? So that's the principle, is that that difference is always going to be, that's why we're created, is to create, the expand the difference. Right? Because then difference, then there's taste. If two things are exactly the same, there's no taste. But if there's a difference, right? If your body temperature is at 23 degrees centigrade, you walk into a room that's 23 degrees centigrade, you don't notice anything, right? But if your body temperature is 40 degrees and you walk into a room that's 23 degrees, then you go, oh, pleasant, nice, cool. But as soon as the body temperature comes to 23 degrees, the rasa is over. You don't notice the temperature. You don't notice the pleasantness of the cooler, right? So that's the point, is difference has to be there for rasa. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole idea, is the difference is fine. But the perspective must be brought in line and connected to Krishna. There will be difference. Prabhupada mentions in the purports, in the Jai Vijay pastimes, when the four Kumaras go to Vaikuntha, that in the spiritual world, the devotee sometimes has such differences of opinion that it could cause a serious fight between them on how to serve Krishna. That offense would be created. But Krishna very cleverly always comes in between, so they become distracted by him and no one ever falls from the spiritual world. Right? Because as soon as he came on the scene, the four Kumaras forget their curse, Jai Vijay forget, everybody's just, he's here and is happy. You know, but the point is that the difference of opinion sometimes is so great, like that. So it happens, because they're individuals. But Krishna is the center of all of it, so therefore it works out perfectly. So if Krishna is made the center of our attention, then it doesn't matter that everybody is so different, has such a different name. That's nice. You know, if everybody was the top, best kirtan leader, then what would happen? Right? So there has to be someone who's leading the kirtan and everybody else following. So therefore it's nice. Someone's good in this, someone in that, and all varieties are there. And that creates the pleasant. That creates the sangha between the devotees. That's what's... So the idea is that connect everything to the Lord, and if you can't do it directly, like this, then the universal form is there, is that you see the energies of the Lord as instruments in his pastimes. Right? In other words, the material pastime is a pastime. It's not his favorite pastime. It doesn't attract him at all. But it's part of him. To be the complete whole, everything must be there. He is Dharma, he is Adharma. But the Adharma doesn't attract him. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, how they say, when you go to a mirror, what do you look at? Your elbow? Right? Is it? No. So, it's part of your body, but it's not like, what's, interesting, right? You look at your face, right? Isn't it? So, that's the whole point, is that Krishna's there, everything's there, but these certain things are important. Does that make sense? Right, okay, so that would basically be from what we spoke on here. It was that for the non-devotees, then to bring them into the proper conception of material energy is that the material energy is God. Though it's not a complete understanding, but at least it's a step forward, then their God and the material energy is theirs. Then for the devotee, then he uses this conception to understand that those elements that he's not properly connecting to Krishna is actually Krishna's potencies. It's coming from Krishna, it's going to Krishna. Right? It's just like you see the Vallabhas, whenever they very regularly, trains come. maybe full trains come with stuff from, you know, cities like Ahmedabad or this or that, where all of all the sense stuff for the deity. And written on the bogey is from Srinath to Srinath. Right? So in their line, no one ever gets credit. They don't have, you know, name on the fan, you know, Mr. S.P. Agarwal, you know, like they don't have that kind of stuff. Their thing is that I perform my duties, which are given by Krishna. The result is given by Krishna, so it's come from Krishna, and now I am simply the instrument for it going back to Krishna. So my service is simply being an instrument of Krishna connecting with Krishna. Right? So that's the principle that is there, is that the universal form, we can see that these are elements of Krishna's energy, and then we can be, they're instruments in his activity, we can be an instrument to that too. They're going to connect anyway, but we. Right? And then the third element is that all these manifestations from Krishna are him, and they're just expansions of what's already existent. It's just a matter of manifestation. Right? That also answers the question where we're always there. It's just we may manifest, just like this unlimited Vaikuntha plant is manifesting in every moment and expanding. So unlimited jivas are manifest, they're always there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is that Krishna is the person, is the real focus, and his expansions and his manifestations are simply to remind us of him and connect us to him. Are there any questions or comments? Or, yes.
You mentioned that the devotees in Vaikuntha see the Braj Leela sweet, that they do it in a way they're appreciating their own rasa.
Mm-hmm.
So can they and how do they, when they see the sweet Braj Leela, develop a desire to enter into that type of relationship?
Do they? Okay. Question is that you have the, we mentioned the residents of Vaikuntha, that they appreciate the Vaikuntha Leela, I mean the Braj Leela, and they see the sweetness. So is there any way that they could enter into the Braj Leela? They could, but generally because they're satisfied, they don't. Like that. Because for them, they may prefer remembering Vaikunthapati through the Braj Leela, like one of the Ramanujas, the previous Acharyas, Andal. All of her songs were exclusively about Krishna and Braj, like that. You know, even to the point where the Sri Vaishnavas will say, well, she's actually an ISKCON devotee. You know? But except because they see it as just another manifestation of his unlimited pastimes. Because for them, these qualities of greatness and all that are important. So his unlimitedness of variety, and one of them is the sweetness, then that is what impresses him with his greatness. In other words, Krishna is so great, he has these. So you may have devotees of the Vaikuntha rasa who they specifically focus only on the Braj pastimes, but still their platform of exchange is still that of Krishna's greatness. Does that make sense? So generally, they may not come across. They could, but they only would if they come across a Braja devotee, because then the pastimes are seen from that other perspective. In other words, each realm has their kind of generic perspective, and within that, then you have details of the individuals within that. But there, it's rules and regulations, the greatness of the Lord. Dwarka, the greatness is not there, but rules and regulations remain. All right, and then in Braj, then you have, it's not the greatness or the rules and regulations, it's simply just the affection. So affection's there in all of them, but it's just affection without being encumbered by the rules or by the greatness. Does that make sense? Like that. So if they came in contact with a Braja Bhakta, then that may, it may enhance just that they may change their focus from just the greatness of the pastimes to the sweet pastimes. Or it may actually bring them to the point of changing. Like you see Baladev Vidyabhushan, he's an initiated Madhva devotee. But coming in contact with the Gaudiyas, then he took up that Gaudiya perspective. Does that make sense? Like that. Yes.
Do
know, also, Lord Chaitanya's perspective was that the highest was service and separation. And then he said, but higher than that is being together but not being able to relate.
Mm-hmm. It's still separation. It's just another form of separation. It's a detail within separation. Right? Like that. That's the principle of that Kurukshetra is higher than even the Braj pastimes. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur then wanted to go to, he spent his last days in Kurukshetra. So he moved to Puri. Because that's the specialty there. That's where Lord Chaitanya went to Puri. Because he's in Mayapur, so he's separate, but it's still Braj. Right? But you go to Dwarka, then it's not Braj. But then that same person's there. So even though it's Jagannath, we'll say, oh, Jagannath is Vaikunthamurti, but that's not how Radharani sees Jagannath. You know, just like the mother doesn't see the kid dressed up in his, you know, outfit for playing games as different from her son. But she can't run out there on the soccer pitch and give him a hug and do the whole thing, you know. Like that. She has to stay on the side and just appreciate. You know, he scores a goal, she'd love to give him a hug. She can't. She has to sit there and control herself. So that's more intense. That's the point. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. Yes.
Arjuna was a personal associate of Krishna. And then he had to come down to see this Virat Swarup, step down.
Okay.
So, how do we understand Divya Chakshu then?
How do we understand Divya Chakshu? Means Arjuna would have to step down to see it. It's not so much step down to see it, it's just a different perspective. It means his relationship with Krishna won't change. Otherwise, why did fear come? Right? Fear is due to loss of security. Security is relationship. Right? Right? So, therefore, when he sees the universal form, his security of being friends with Krishna is compromised. Therefore, fear comes. Does that make sense? He sees the universal form, then that means Krishna's God. He's the greatest. He's the most powerful. What am I doing sitting on the bed and harassing him? I mean, calling him Yadu because we're Kurus. Because the moon dynasty is always subservient to the sun dynasty. So by calling him Yadava, he's actually saying, hey, you're junior to me. You know, that's the joking. That's the friendship. So all that is becomes compromised. So therefore, he becomes afraid. He's not afraid because he's worried about, you know, losing his body. That's for the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, his security is his body, his home, his money, his mundane relationships, his position, his beauty, his all these different opulences. So if those become compromised, then there's fear, because then the relationships is lost, or what it creates for you is lost, or does that make sense? There's a sense of loss, so then that creates fear. So his position is different. His rasa doesn't change. He doesn't drop from his position. It's just that by Krishna's arrangement, he sees from a different perspective, and because of that, then it disturbs. Yeah, change the vision. That's why Divya Chakshus, because the devotees don't see like that. They'll just see Krishna everywhere. They won't see the universal form. So to see the universal form, then he has to have that vision. So we look at as divine being something higher. For Krishna, for Arjuna, it's a lower vision, but it doesn't mean that he drops to a lower position. Just like the Uttamadikari will take on the vision of the Madhyamadikari, but it doesn't mean that he drops from his uttam position of understanding and realization and practice. Right? Does that make sense? So that's natural, is that there's a particular perspective giving. Just as a preacher, the Madhyama is the perspective. So even if someone's a neophyte, he still looks at the world through the vision of the Madhyama. Right? even though he's a neophyte by understanding and realization, but he views the world as a Madhyama. The Madhyama has the realization of a Madhyama, the Uttama as an Uttama. But the perspective is that. That's why it's said that the preacher should not be criticized, because they're having that vision that Krishna wants to have. That is what benefits. It means a neophyte doesn't benefit others, they benefit themselves, or who's immediately connected to them. The Uttama doesn't benefit conditioned souls, because they see them all as devotees of Krishna. Right? There's no need. You're already an advanced devotee, more advanced than me, so there's no need. Only the Madhyama benefits others spiritually. Right? So therefore, that benefiting others is most important to Krishna. Therefore, anybody who takes that mentality, whether they're Uttam or neophyte, doesn't matter. They're special. So they should not be criticized. You know? And the idea is that, you know, our whole movement is supposed to be taking that mentality, so therefore we're not supposed to criticize devotees. Like that, you know, it's very easy. Krishna, Lord Chaitanya has made it very simple for us, you know, not so complicated. You know, we respect everybody. Is that okay?
Our relationship requires something common, but some difference makes it interesting, so are these two things?
Okay, difference makes it interesting, but common, okay. It's difference within a common platform. You're taking temperature. So temperature is the commonality, but there's a difference in temperature. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, you have food, you know. One is rich, one is sour. But the two together go very well. Right? You know, when something's too rich, then you mix it with something sour, and it enhances it. It cuts the heaviness, you know, some achar, some chutney, something like this, you know, some lemon. You understand? So there's a common point. That's why the whole Vedic culture, you see, Varnashram is to establish what are the commonalities, what are the differences, so that you can experience rasa. It's probably one of the greatest injustices to the devotional, social interaction that Varnashram is used as an economic, or purely as an economic or administrative, you know, managerial element. It's simply to create what is your relationship with another so that you can interact as devotees. That's the whole purpose of Varnashram. And because interaction of devotees is the culture of Krishna consciousness, therefore the Vedic culture is the closest to what the spiritual culture looks like. Because then it's naturally close. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, it's like, okay, you know, the gopis put, you know, how you say, things in their nose. Like the aborigines also put a bone in their nose. So, okay, you want to put something in your nose, great, but you know, it's kind of like, you know, so they, you can imagine, you know, you go out and you made the aboriginals, devotees of Krishna, and Radharani would have this very lovely bone in her nose, you know, like that, you know, because they would think, oh, so beautiful. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, you bring it closer because you can appreciate the original culture. But following the culture is not the purpose. The purpose is to create the platform of satsang between devotees, that you can deal on the spiritual platform at the same time accommodate your material identity that you think you are. Right? So, the kid thinks I am a kid. The adult thinks they're an adult. Therefore, then Varnashram has a way how they interact. The adult acts in one way, the child acts in another. Then they have a nice relationship. You know what I'm saying? So like that. And only in emergency it might switch. The parent is sick, has to be taken care of. Then the adult becomes the child, and the child becomes the adult. In the rasa, right? But they don't, because the child's acting as an adult, they don't overstep their boundaries of how they would deal with their parent. You know what I'm saying? But they take that lead. Does that make sense? So that's what the whole system is for. So that's why you see it's recommended, at the same time it's sidelined. Means if you're going to use it for material purposes other than proper Vaishnava of etiquette with devotees to connect yourself to Krishna, you missed the point. But if you use it for that, then it's a most useful tool, most useful instrument, right? It's one of Krishna's potencies, therefore the instrumental. It's from the universal form. Right? It's one of the first manifestations. Like that. It said, after Krishna created everything, then he created the Varnashram, the four Brahma, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, to protect the universe. And he protected kings. It means, in other words, Varnashram protects the universe, and Krishna created kings to protect Varnashram. Right? And he created Brahmins to protect the concept and the transference of this understanding from generation to generation. So like that. That's how it works. Okay.
Like a new perspective on understanding Krishna as a person. But we often heard, and I don't know if it's mentioned in Prabhupada's book or it just was spoken, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, and one who kills demons is Vasudeva Krishna. Is it how
it's how, okay. So the question is that giving this different perspective on Krishna then. But it's said that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, and when in Vrindavan, the demons are killed at Vasudeva Krishna. So, yes, that's there. So, Krishna in Vrindavan means the complete Krishna. All others are parts of that, but it's not that they can't be manifesting in the same place. Does that make sense? It's a different mood, right? It's just like, the boy is walking down the street with the girl, right? They're arm in arm, right? Like this. And some gook comes up and starts harassing the girl. And so the boy, you know, lets go of the girl, walks over, you know, and sorts the guy out, and then goes back and then puts his arm around the girl and walks off. Right? So it's not that it's a different, but it's a different mood. So he doesn't manifest that with, you know, like that. It doesn't manifest with. So it's a separate thing. So it's a complete rasa. You know, it's not like others, they'll be sitting there drinking their tea while someone's attacking them, and while they're drinking tea with one hand, they're fighting with them with the other and all that. Or anything like that. You know. It means for the materialists, they like that. Because then, you know, they can do all their control of everything. But Krishna would rather just appreciate drinking his tea or appreciate fighting. Right? Because you don't get the full rasa. Oh, well, that's an annoyance. Just he's eating and just pushing the guy away. It's not that he's physically. Because he'll get, you know, when I finish, you know, eat like that. Yeah, but still, it's, yeah. Does that make sense?
Leaving
Vrindavan means that mood is okay. So then, to bring in the point of he doesn't leave Vrindavan, it's like this: you have a lady. Let's take one woman, okay? Let us say her father comes and stands in front of her. What is her mood? Huh? Obedient, but what rasa? Daughter, right? Father leaves the room. Husband walks into the room. What is the rasa? Yeah, okay. Husband leaves the room. Son walks into the room. What is the mood? Okay, you understand? So, only in Vrindavan do you have the devotees have that pure, unalloyed love that they will draw from Krishna, Braja Krishna. Right? As soon as the same person leaves Vrindavan, they don't draw from him that. So therefore, that's all that manifests. Does that make sense? Okay.
Maharaj, you mentioned that actually the sahajas exclusively focus on one mood or one rasa. And you can read in the Nectar of Devotion that actually it's a natural symptom of the Raga Yuga Sadhana Bhakta, to focus on one mood of one Ragadika Bhakta. So how can you understand this?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So then the point is as we, you know, the context is there, is that that is one's focus because that's one's relationship. But that doesn't mean that one can't relate to Krishna in any of the other forms. Because there it mentions focus on a particular devotee. Right? You want to go to Braj, you have to focus on a Braja Bhakta. You want to go to Vaikuntha, you focus on a Vaikuntha Bhakta, right? But what we're discussing here is not the Bhakta, it's Krishna. Right? So, therefore, you may be focused on the Braja devotees, but it doesn't mean that Krishna and Vaikuntha can't be related to. Understand? It's the same Krishna. Just that in Vaikuntha, no one's relating to him as in that mood. The pastime of Krishna when he left the gopis, right? The gopis are looking for him. And he takes the forearm form, you know? And the gopis come and ask Narayan, did you see Krishna? Right? You know, he's got four arms, you know, whatever, you know? So it worked. But when Radharani came, he couldn't maintain it. He'd keep going in and out of the... He couldn't hold it because she is the embodiment of the complete Sarup Shakti, which means his complete personality, the counterpart. So therefore, she would just draw from him his complete personality. He couldn't manifest part. But the gopis are expansions of Radharani, their part. So he could successfully manifest only a part of his personality. You understand? So that's this is the principle of vibhava. Vibhava, it's based on what is being drawn from Krishna. Krishna is rasa. You understand? The devotee is in a rasa. Krishna is not in a rasa. Krishna is rasa. You understand? Mother Jashoda is in parental rasa. But Krishna is rasa. So she can draw from him as rasa the parental rasa where he acts like a child. Right? But Nectar Devotion also mentions when all the devotees are there at once and how he's dealing with all of them at once. So each one is drawing from him that rasa. But the situation will be a prominent rasa. So they're in the house, then Mother Jashoda's is the prominent rasa. Everybody else stays in the background. In the field, the cowherd boys. You know, when he leaves the field and the gopis. You know what I'm saying? So there's always the prominence. All things are always there, but the prominence is there. Even he's with the cowherd boys, still the lunch is made by Mother Jashoda, and she's sending it with the servants. So that element of the parental rasa will be there, but it's in support of the boys out, you know, having a picnic. Right? But when they're in the house, then the boys are support to son having, you know, a party with all his friends. But they have to behave themselves because Mother Jashoda is the prominent. You know, they can't sit there and steal and this and that. But when they're out with that, they can steal each other's lunch and eat with all their hands and stick things in each other's mouth and make tricks and jokes. They can't do that when they're in Mother Jashoda's place. Does that make sense?
What about Govardhan pastime?
What about Govardhan meaning?
Yeah, because he has exchanges with all at the same time.
Oh, Govardhan Leela. Yeah, but each one is exclusive to the other. The others don't see. Right? The cowherd boys think that he's shaking because, you know, holding up the mountain like that. They don't know this because he's looking at the gopis. Like that. So therefore you have these situations where all of the rasas are manifest at once, but it will be in a more subtle form. So the ones that are less intimate, then they take prominence. Right? In other words, in an informal situation, intimacy takes the background. That's why it's so sinful that in the modern culture that intimacy between man and woman is manifest in public. It's just wrong. It's against rasa. It's being felt to be free. But it's not human rasa. Human rasa, because it's intimate, it's valued more. It's kept more close to the heart. Dogs can do anything in the street. So those who go out and walk hand in hand and do all that, they're dogs. They're not humans. Fortunately, dogs can also be devotees. Lord Chaitanya, but know it, that they're dogs, and they shouldn't glorify it or consider themselves superior. They are independent, yes, but as dogs, not as humans. Humans, then intimacy, you know, shrinks in formal situations like that. And in informal, then it glows. That's just human life. And Krishna prefers, he's taken the human form. He's done all the other forms, but human is his, you know, what he likes the most. Is that okay? You have a question? Yes.
You can mention repeatedly in the Kutta what sometimes the difference of opinion between devotees creates problems and then the creation of manifesting solve this problem. So how we can have this problem solved here in the material world, because also there are so many differences.
That's opinion. Okay. Question is, how do we solve the problems here in the material world of differences of opinion? Because in Vaikuntha, then Krishna, the same thing, Krishna. Just remembering Krishna. What would Krishna like? You're dealing with devotees. What's the actual proper mentality and all that? So it's still Krishna. You know, so that's the key. Like that. Vaikuntha will be less because of, how you say, everybody's all awe and reverence, but there's a difference in what could be. Some could be, it could be a little bit more informal, some has to be more formal. Like that. Like, what's his name? Gopu Kumar, because he was offering prayers and being very loose and all that. And then some felt that that was very improper. While the very mature ones know that's okay, because he's just appreciating our Lord in various ways. So some thought it was okay, some didn't. But then he was taken aside by Narad Muni and said, you know, around here, that doesn't go, you know, like that. So, Vrindavan, you'll have more, because right wing means I belong to, left wing means they are mine. So when you have the feeling of possession, then naturally there's going to be more of a clash of, you know, that's why it's arranged, the pastimes, it moves so that everybody gets their chance. Like that. Does that make sense? Because if the mother Jashoda, he'd never leave the house. Of the cows, he'd never leave the goshala. If the cowherd boys, he'd never come back. They'd just sleep out in there, you know. You know, if the gopis, he would never leave them. So something's gotta give, right? So like that. So Krishna's just arranged by Yoga Maya these pastimes that it just keeps moving so everybody gets their opportunity. Right? And sometimes it's exclusive and sometimes it's mixed. So then you get all the different flavors. Does that make sense? Like that. So there's always a full manifestation. Like he goes to the goshala in the morning, he milks the cows, it's exclusively the cows. Or in the evening when he's coming back, it's exclusively the cows, because he's calling their names and counting the groups of cows coming back. Right? So that's exclusively the cows. And then when he goes out with the cowherd boys, it's exclusively them. Or he's at Govindastal, it's exclusively the gopis. Or he's, you know, there and Mother Jashoda is, you know, feeding him or bathing him or waking him up in the morning and doing this exclusively her. Right? And there's times where it's mixed. And the cowherd boys will be there, you know, when Krishna's eating or dressing like that. The gopis are there cooking or serving. So you get these mixes also. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. Yeah.
I don't want to bring the conversation from the sublime to something else, but years ago I saw this book. I was speaking about the Virat Rupa. And it was called Pictures from the Hubble Spacecraft. And what they did is they took a section of the sky where there was absolutely no stars or no light or nothing. And then they took this huge, powerful telescope and they took a picture of that section of the sky. And because the telescope was so powerful, they saw, like, if you saw the pictures, they're amazing pictures, like constant, you know, like whirling, you know, galaxies, you know, by taking this picture of the sky that where there was no light or nothing seen by visible eye or anything like that. So I was wondering, what are they seeing, those galaxies out there when they take those pictures? Or I talked to Sadhguru about it, and he said that there are other universes. But then you hear that our universe is covered by seven layers that are impenetrable. Mm-hmm. So how can you see outside our universe and see other universes? Mm-hmm. So what are they seeing, or what is it?
It means here the universe, they've taken a definition that this group of planets is the universe, right?
It has a galaxy.
Yeah. So then this is their, by their definition, what it is. But you can't see the next universe. But by their definition, so these are just different planetary systems. Because there's so many planetary systems. They group, just like you have the Saptarishi, that's one group of planets where all the seven rishis sit. So like that, you have so many different, there's 22 heavenly planets. So it's not just a planet, it's a group of planets. Just like the hellish regions, hellish planets are a group of planets. So you have these groups. So they can see these groups, and they're, you know, coming, going, this and that. And so many things are happening like that. So that's not the specialness. The specialness is that it's already been created and always works in the same way because Krishna's created it. The blueprint's already been made. So if they acknowledge Krishna as the architect who's created it, and Brahma as the engineer who has implemented it, then the universe would be much easier to understand. But because they're trying to simply figure it out without the element of God, so they won't understand the energies, potencies, the transformations, and all. They won't be able to understand. So therefore they come up with these. Because physics creates these different dimensional. They'll try to create that there's all these other universes layered on top of each other. But that's just they're applying both a physical but more of a perceptual element on top of it. You know, it works for them because they're trying to leave God out of it. But it's a thing of physics that you have, let's say you have this book, okay, so... But everybody in the room may see it differently, right? Especially here, the most boys will see it as, you know, this is Bhagavatam, the sacred. But you put it in a bookshop, you know, and some will say, oh, this is a sacred book. Some will see, oh, it's Indian book. Some will see it as, oh, it's something on metaphysics. Something will say, oh, this is boring. And a bug will see, wow, great, something to eat. So all those are going on at once, so they'll consider that's all those books. So we mentioned, you know, five different perspectives. It's actually five separate books. So that's how they work. So in that way you can have millions of perspectives, so this, and so they'll overlay everything, and it works nice for them. Especially if you, you know, lay around in a wheelchair all day and have nothing else to do. You know, so then you know, that becomes your perspective. You know, because otherwise you get bored. So these things are there, but it has its limit because those perspectives are created by Krishna. They're also part of the universal form. So you only have 8,400,000 main perspectives. Within that, you'll have some detail. You know? So that's already been created. If they acknowledge that, then their research could move forward a lot quicker. You know, they would understand. You know, but it's like, why know something that's not going to do you any good? You know, what use will it do for you? To know that the floor is actually made of completely separate particles that are always moving and not connecting doesn't necessarily give you confidence to step on it. No. Right? But for us, the perspective is solid, so therefore we can walk on it. But according to physics, it's not. You know what I'm saying? So the physics uses this multidimensional to answer their points. So Sariputta will use that a lot. He's a physicist. You know, and physics is considered the top of the hard sciences. You know? Like that. So they take prominence in the scientific field. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So they're seeing other planetary systems.
They're seeing other planetary systems like that.
Just keep it simple for me, Mark.
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
You just made a reference to the 8,400,000 species. How many species of humans are on this Earth planet now?
That I couldn't say.
Roughly?
The point is that, let give you a hint. Of the 400,000, most of them are not civilized. So only if, I'll tell you four species that are civilized. Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras.
Species?
Yeah, it's a species. So it's a completely different concept of what is a species. A Brahmin is a species. A Kshatriya is a species. This is how they perceive
action. And not Japanese, Eskimo.
That will be a more broader within the species, within that. Because even within Japanese, you'll have their four varnas. Within this, you'll have Nishadas, you'll have. But that's also species. You know, you have broader and you have small. Just like you have Rakshasas, that's a group. Yakshas are a group. Anything that has basically a head, two arms, and two legs is human. Right? So in that, you have so many different kinds. You know, like that. But you'll have all those here also. It's just like you have Caucasian, but Indians are Caucasians. Right? But within Indians, they have three groups. You have North, South, and East. The Dravidians are completely different. How they think, and it's completely different than North. It's completely different than this side of India. So like that, then you have so many species. That's why it's important that you find someone who's like-minded. They think like you. Their values are the same in that.
But then, so a Japanese Brahmin, American Brahmin, same species, Japanese Brahmin, Japanese Kshatriya, different species.
Yeah. Means that there'll be some slight difference in the variation there. But there is a difference, but they'll be able to appreciate. Just like you see nobility, no matter what their background, they're one group. Therefore, you know, the German kings are marrying into the English crown, or vice versa. Nobility is just nobility on the planet. They think in one way, they have the same like this. But still, that's within tribals. Only if they're actually following Varnashram, then they're human. You know, in other words, most of the 400,000 technically are subhuman, they're tribals. Because only if they're following Varnashram do they classify actually as cultured humans. So you have culture and uncultured. So that was Lord Chaitanya's point to Sanatana Goswami. Of all the species, of all the living entities, unlimited, very few are humans. Of those who are human, very few are cultured, meaning follow Varnashram. Of those who follow Varnashram, very few are interested in transcendence. Of those interested, very few actually endeavor for it. Then of those who endeavor for it, very few get it. You know? And of those who are getting transcendence, very few actually take up that devotional, Krishna as a person. You know, so this also understanding that, you can see the potency of Lord Chaitanya's mission, and especially of Srila Prabhupada, that in one sense he kind of made it very seemingly more commonplace that you have such rare human beings.
Natural stage for us, are we just supposed to like apply our intellect to remember it, and it might be artificial, it might seem artificial at first, and then become natural? Is that how we're supposed to be?
Yeah. Well, the Virat Rupa is always intellectual. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of you think of it or don't. It's just, in other words, if you're thinking the Virat Rupa, that this is the body of the Lord, that's the mundane concept. But if you think of Virat Rupa as Krishna's potencies that are interacting with, you know, as instruments in his material pastime, that's the better station. That's what the devotees use. But even then, eventually they get where that's not the point because they're just always absorbed in Krishna, so they don't have to connect, you know, things like that. They're always thinking of Krishna, so they don't have to connect their toothpaste or stuff like that to the universal form. Okay.
How does the center sankirtan take place?
How does the?
To the contemplating universal form. Prabhupada said there should be an awakening of sankirtan.
of service. In that you see is that, okay, if it is universal form, okay, then there is the potency of mother. There's the potency of son. Those two connect. What is, you know, I'm attached to that connection, tasting the experience of that connection. But it's Krishna's potency. So therefore, how does Krishna like his mothers to connect with their sons? You know, because it's Krishna anyway. Krishna is the potency of mother. Krishna is the potency of son. How would Krishna like to interact? Right?